Greetings, fine gentlemen. Another wonderful time, another wonderful day to be alive. Frankly, the best time. What a privilege. I have God privilege. That God would place me at such a time as this in all of creation's history. That here we are, gentlemen. Privileged by God to be here. My goodness. Copper Star, welcome, fine sir. Afternoon, fellow kings, Christians, you too, Catholics, nationalists, and all-around champions of your people. Thank you, Copper Star. It's a very kind and tribally heartwarming welcome. Makes my heart warm. Warmed my heart. Mr. Max will be pleased. Do we have any other Catholics? Probably just Mr. Max. I don't know. Maybe we have some more. Who knows? Who knows? My friend Scott from South Africa, who runs Reactionary Opinions, he himself is a trad Cath. So we have these friends in Catholic places. They are welcome here. It's a bit dark today. There's a storm brewing. The fake news lied to us. They said there was going to be rain last night, and there was not. So maybe tonight. Tonight, it's going to make rain. Tonight. My wife and I were reading some Wendell Berry, as we do in the car on the way to our chiropractor appointment today. And it's really good just to revisit old Wendog, old Wendy, old Wendelio, old Beza. If you haven't read any Wendell Berry, I highly recommend buying the book that really got me started. It's really good reading, was a collection of his essays called A World-Ending Fire. Yeah, it's not all doom and gloom. It's actually quite a white pill. Drongo, good evening, fine sir. But so in the chapter we were reading today, he was just going on about my free market. And it got me thinking, you know, this whole libertarian to Christian nationalist pipeline that we are into, like, you know, libertarian soy boy. Hey, you know, if you stay in it long enough, you start drifting toward nationalism and Christianity to the point of eventually becoming far right, and people saying, "Oh my gosh, you're a bigot." And I was just thinking, you know, what a shame. You know, if I had started streaming as a libertarian, or if I had started like writing quite seriously, I wrote a lot on Facebook. You know, back in the day, I would opine on Facebook about all of my free market and my nap, which is not going and having a nap, although it's probably of the same efficacy. It is the non-aggression principle, which libertarians aggressively believe in, which basically means you don't believe in power, so no one needs to listen to you. But anyway, if I had, you know, if I had based my whole life and media persona around libertarianism, I would kind of be, it would be sunken cost, right? It would be the sunken investment of like, crap, I need to double down on my libertarianism. And I do thank God that I was never stuck or trapped in a libertarian mode, because I, you know, tons of these think tank talking head kind of guys, I think they're all stuck of like, oh, I came out as a raging libertarian, like I can't admit I'm a nationalist now, like I have to double down, you know, double down on my free market. And I was just, you know, imagine arguing, you know, because that's where we were, right? A ton of us were libertarian boys, and like, free market is everything, capitalism, baby. You know, all this stuff. And even the moment you start venturing into this, a lot of conservative-y type guys are like, are you a communist? You know, it's like, no, I actually hate communism just as much as I hate capitalism and my free market. And they're like, how? Why? How dare you? Like, like full-on, how dare you? Vibes, you know. Heard it here. Scott almost thanks God. I realized the the error of my ways, and then I indeed thanked, I repented and indeed thanked God. But, you know, we get this kind of like, we're so butthurt over anyone who attacks capitalism or anyone who attacks my free market because we don't have any alternative. We're not given, you know, because we think free market, we think capitalism, we're like, well, America or the West or Christendom, right? Christendom birthed the free market. And what we mean by that is peace and prosperity. You know, Christendom, America birthed prosperity and peace and Christendom and rule of law and all this kind of stuff. So of course we're going to defend it because what's the alternative? It's communism. You know, it's Russia and China and Africa. You know, Africa is just a lack of capitalism. Africa is a lack of my free market. And it's like, you know, we aren't told the alternative. So I want to go into the alternative today. You know, I titled this stream, Choose This Day Whom You Will Serve. Your corporatist, your foreign corporatists, or your underclass, your own underclass. And the reason I titled it that way is when you look at my free market, who is it free? Who is that? You know, okay, let's define terms here. What is a market? A market is when a bunch of people get together to produce and to trade value, goods, services, etc. So that's a market. So a free market means there is no cost of entry to that market. That is, wait a minute, if you are a capitalist in the essence of someone who uses property to produce value, if that is our definition of a capitalist, you should look at a free market and be like, whoa, 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 chaps, no such thing as a free lunch. Someone had to organize that market, had to make sure that the roads to that market. Now you're going to roads. No, that was a mistake. I didn't mean to bring up the R word. So road. I'm just for analogy's sake here, though, like someone had to keep the roads free of road pirates. Someone had to, set up the market so that people could come in and trade, right? Nothing is free. So people are like, but Scott, that's not what they mean. What they mean is like free access, like everyone can come in and access. And it's like, okay, that's also not true. It's free to the people who can. So if there's a cost of entry to a market, so let's say that the cost of entry to this market is 12 labudidoody million yen. Well, now people who don't have that much yen aren't free to access the market. And so this is the true definition of our free market, is who is this market free to? Free market means China has free reign over manufacturing, right? Because for them, manufacturing is cheaper to produce things and cart them long haul to our marketplace. And we aren't gatekept from selling in someone else's. So they're not going to protect their manufacturers who have to pay more in labor and more in goods prices. So we can come in there and undercut them. I want that market to be free. So the Chinese industrialists have a free rein at putting all of the native, regardless of where you are on Earth, but let's just say America, the Chinese industrialists have a free rein of outcompeting and shutting out all of the native industrialists from this market.
Oh, but Scott, they can still bring their products to the market. It's still free. They need to lower their prices.
And it's like, dude, when you understand that they have been priced out of the market, it's like supply and demand, bucko. Like you cannot come in America, where you're paying your floor man, you know, $20 an hour with benefits and all this kind of stuff, mandated, like you legally have to do all of this stuff. I think it's great. You should look after your workers. You know, that was Henry Ford. Henry Ford was a phenomenal corporatist. He was a noblesse oblige corporatist. He knew if he wanted to keep all of his staff and have a flywheel of competence and momentum, because there's no staff turnover, he's going to have to pay them. So the dude paid them enough so that they could afford their own products that they were making, and they didn't have to go and work elsewhere and take all their secrets with them and have to now retrain new people, blah, 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 blah stuff. The dude paid his people well. He lifted the underclass out of poverty by being a really good corporatist, by being a good aristocrat. Some guy in China is having child labor. This is the same thing that happened in England, in Europe during the industrialization, industrial revolution. Revolution is like, oh, we can force 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old kids down the mine. We can force 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old kids to just sit in the cotton mill all day, or the linen mill, or the whatever work you've got to do. That's, you know, 10 hours a day of grinding meniality of like, oh yeah, we fed them one meal. That's the cost. Same thing still happens in China, you know, of like people working absolute survival, survival wages to, you know, to produce things that you're paying some American guy $20 an hour for. You're paying them one meal a day, or, you know, whatever the equivalent is. And it's like, you can't compete with that. And now the free market guy says, well, that's just the free market, brother. You know, if they want to exploit their people, they can exploit their people. And it's like, yeah, you're an evil bastard. You're an evil bastard who not only are they exploiting their people, and it's like, of course, don't meddle in other people's business. I'm not going to send America over there to go sort some crap out just because they're abusing little Chinese girls. Like, no, no, no. Like, they can abuse Chinese girls at will. They are the patriarchs there. They do what they want over there. But they don't send the fruit of their sin and exploitation here to cut out our guys, to cut out our guys who are treating their people well, who are treating their people at least, even if it's just, well, under duress, like I still have to pay this guy $20 or I get shut down. It's like, great. You know, this is what we can control. So that's why we want protectionism. We want to protect. My free markets is like, no, I want protected markets. I want sovereign markets. I want our markets. I want in-group markets, right? Oh, you're Chinese? No, you can't bring your stuff to our market. Oh, please, we Chinese, we bring our stuff to your market. We got good stuff. And it's like, no, you don't come to our market. We make our stuff at our own, we make it here. And if we can't make it here, then maybe you can bring your stuff here, but it's at like 1,000% tariff, not free, no free lunch. We charge you 1,000% tariff until our guys can get online. And, you know, it's basically what China did to us. They're like, we're going to copy everything. And until we can get it online, we'll subsidize it and everything. And then eventually, boom, they've subsidized their own industry. We subsidized their industry. Our own freaking corporates went over there and built them industry. It's crazy. Mr. Max, welcome, fine sir. Resident Catholic checking in. Well, praise God. Copperstar, Henry Ford was supporting the Austrian artist. Yeah, because they love their people and they love their place. You know, so this is what I really wanted to hit on here is like the artist, he realized the biggest issue facing the German people was the underclass, the UQ, the underclass question. What do we do with our underclass? You know, because the liberals are like, the poors, the filthies, you know, put them on welfare, or, you know, keep the media stirring them up, and class warfare, you know, stir up grievances. You know, the unions used to be a thoroughly, and the left, like, you know, the true left. That's why the little photo I used, the little meme I used on Twitter for the stream was the longest, you know, Huey Long, who was the dictator of Louisiana back in the 20s. But if you're a true leftist, it's because you are against corporatist, elitist control, and you are for the common man, the working man, the underclass. You are for the people. That is the true place of left economics. You know, leftist economics is protectionism. You know, and that's why libertarians are so out of whack, because they are rightist economics, which is protect the elites, and they are leftists socially, which is degeneracy and no religion. You know, so that's why we turn it on its head with Christian nationalism. We are leftists economically. We're all about protection. We're all about how do we drive the underclass out of poverty and violence. We're all about what are the protections of our property, our people. And then socially, We're right. We're rightward socially. Christian morality. You know, we don't allow degeneracy. We don't allow debased, you know, absolute degeneracy. And that's where everyone, you know, the meme has been so successful, because Christian nationalism, the platform of that, has been tied to some freaking 1930s German dudes who, oh, just because their policies are leftist economics and right socially, oh, well, now no one's allowed to do that anymore. And it's like, just because the devil drank water, now all of us can't drink water. It's like, no, water is good. Drink water. It doesn't matter who drank water. You know, freaking Abraham Lincoln drank water and wore a suit. Oh, are we not supposed to drink water and wear suits anymore just because some clown 100 years ago wore a suit and drank water? It's like, no. Come on. Anyway. Copper Star. For being so based, they've made the Foreign Foundation pivotal in the GAE. I was thinking about that today, man, you know, because they came out in Europe with something with like the gay raptor or something like that. They're like some gay truck, you know. And I was like, wow. You know, imagine the Ford Foundation printing out like, here's our greatest quotes of our founder, Henry Ford, you know, screen wrapped around like an F-150, you know, of like all his opinions on bankers and all of that kind of stuff. It would be great. W Laser, welcome, brother. Mr. Max, I think I wrote about free markets a while ago on how a global free market was a race to the bottom for the working people. Exactly that. So I wanted to hit on this. So the race to the bottom, obviously for industry, right? So who can produce the cheapest ass goods, the cheapest produced goods? And right now it's China, followed by India and all that whole Asian bloc. The next thing is labor. So in a free market of labor, you know, so again, what is a free market? What is a marketplace, right? So like, oh guys, well, we all live here. There's 1,000 guys who live in this market. Let's use the word economic zone. 1,000 of us live in this economic zone. This is our economic zone, right? So like, oh guys, we all live here. This is our economic zone. So anytime a job is listed, anytime a project is listed or whatever, like the pool that they are pulling from is us 1,000 guys, you know? So it's like, we're tending our lives, doing our work. And it's like, oh, this guy's got a job. It's like, well, you know, I'm not going to, you know, I don't know if you guys saw that the other day on Twitter, some guy was like, well, we paid $12 an hour on our advert and like no one showed up to lug boxes. And it's like, yeah, no one's going to show up for $12 an hour to lug boxes. And they're like, well, these 1,000 people just won't do the work. So we've got to import people from outside our zone. And it's like, no, that's not how it works, buddy. That's not how it works. You know, you basically fix what is the problem here of like, why will no one do the work? It could be a moral thing, you know, and then we need to preach about the righteousness of hard work and good work. But it's like, if you're a crap ass boss who just exploits people, of course, eventually people are going to have a disdain for work. You know, if you're a crap ass boss who's like, yeah, I just want the cheapest people. You know, I've worked for people like that who are like, you know, bottom line is everything. You know, you get people on to work for you who are depending on this check. Like the whole point they work for you and not for someone else is because they're expecting 40 hours a week at this express thing. It's like, oh, sorry, we've got no work, cut the hours. And like, you can understand that from the business point of view, but it's like, there's no love for the people, you know? And of course they're going to disdain business owners. Of course they're going to disdain the wealthy because it's like, they can't even care enough about me to you know, give me an extra $150 at the end of the week. Like they've got to cut, you know, the first thing to cut is the labor. So Mexico, you know, so China has, through free market, China has shut out and closed America's industry. And through the free market, Mexico has shut out and closed down America's labor, right? So they outcompete the labor because they're like, I will do it for 10%. Excuse my very bad Spanish accent. But it's like, you cannot compete with people who are willing to get out of their hell, out of their third world hell, and come to a first world market and be like, yeah, I'll do it for a quarter of the price. and this is better than where I came from. You know? So industry, labor. And then the third one is capital/property real estate Yeah, capital and real estate. So China has taken industry, Mexico has taken labor, and the rootless cosmopolitan corporatist elites have taken finance, right? Capital. So for instance, you know, a great example of this was the whole GameStop to the moon thing, where like all of the American investors, the American capitalists, financiers, were like retail investors, were like, we got it, we got something. And the big elites are like, no, this isn't a free market, chaps. This is not a free market. This is free for us. It's not free for you. So we're going to shut you out and we're going to reestablish our position so that we're going to bail ourselves out of like of this no, this is not a free market. None of this is free, let me tell you. And so the real kind of capital free market is for the corporatist, the elite. It's not for the American. The American investor is shut out of the free market. It's the same way for like inside investing, right? If some politicians, so I put in there with capital real estate is lobbying and advocacy, lobbyists and advocacy, right? Because if you have a huge $1 billion corporation and you're like, oh yeah, let's change some laws so that only I can afford to jump through these legal loopholes, and so only I can afford the freedom of the market, everyone else below this threshold can't afford to get into this market, you know? And so you have all these sorts of laws and loopholes and things that you have to jump through in order to access the market. And so, you know, it's not free to anyone who can't afford a lawyer or afford an accountant or afford new, you know, like I was even reading the other day with all the supply chain stuff, you know, in California, you cannot operate a trucking company with a truck older than 2011, you know? So they're basically saying to, you know, if you're a small mom and pop trucker, you're like, oh, I'd like to start my own trucking business. I've got a 2005 truck. You know, that's all I can afford. It's like, well, sorry, you actually can't even, you can't pick up a gig. You can't pick up a job because you will literally go to jail if a cop stops you driving this car. You can't even go to the DMV and get your car registered, your truck registered. Like, you're just priced out. Sorry, buddy. And then the other thing is you can't be an owner operator picking up containers at the port. It's only big corporates that can send their trucks to pick up stuff. So it's like, okay, it's institutional. You see, they're creating institutional loopholes to price out American truckers, right? So it's corporate trucking companies, not Americans, right? You know, you could have, you know, a million mom and pop owner operator whatevers. And it's like, no, only the corporates can do this. So it's like, you know, your average conservative, your average traditional guy, we hate organization. We hate lawfare and institutions. So it's like, oh, I have to get together with three or four other truckers and form a LLC and form a corporation. It's a bit too much work for me. And so they don't. They just quit, or they, you know, go elsewhere, and the market gets monopolized, gets consolidated to the corporatists. The next thing is real estate. They do the same thing with real estate, right? Of like, if you have huge institutional money, no one cares about market prices. You know, it's like you just blow the market prices out the water and you can buy up all the, you know, and it's a long game. You can hold the property forever. You know, and then you have all these kind of inside tracks on interest rates and, you know, understanding where the next developments are going to happen and pushing where the next developments are going to happen. You're pushing, you know, prices and things like that, pushing tax appraisals of things to push people out or whatever. It's crazy stuff, you know, but it's like, it's not a free market. It's free only to the people who can afford to get in that market. You know, same with lobbying and advocacy, you know, of like, why don't the right have an ADL? Why don't the right have lobbyists and all this kind of stuff? It's like, because it costs a lot of money, you know? And so you need big shot philanthropists, big shot corporatists, or outside, you know, China. The reason China has lobbyists and advocates is because they want to protect their industrial monopoly, their manufacturing monopoly. So you're going to send spies, you're going to send lobbyists and advocates and all this kind of stuff to protect your free market. You know, I would put probably an 80 to 90% chance that most conservative think tanks have Chinese money flowing into them to preach my free markets and preach, you know, capitalism and, you know, all this stuff. So praise God. White student, welcome. Fine, sir. Mr. Max, Copper Star, it's like when they put Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill. Man, Andrew Jackson, based. Copper, they took our gerbs. Mr. Max, China is buying so much property as well. Yeah, you know, that's the other thing of protectionism is like, who is buying all of the property? You know, it's either big shot corporatists or again, outsiders. Of like, you know, because the big thing for China, is that they are huge investors into American bonds. You know, so the American government is indebted to the Chinese government. And the Chinese government are being very clever. And it's like, well, we've got all these dollars. Let's buy up actual property. Now, what the Chinese have done in Africa is like, you know, these African Africans are like five-year-olds with cocaine when it comes to foreign loans, you know. So the Chinese are like, well, oh, we give you a foreign loan. You know, we'll buy up your bonds and give you loans, which is what they've done to America as well, but what they're doing in Africa. And so these African, you know, governors are like, oh, money, yuan, baby, you know, just freaking, you know, going out in glory on the credit card. Dave Ramsey would not be pleased. And of course they can't pay it back because the African economies are so shot. There's zero, you know, taxable kind of income to help. And the Chinese know this, obviously. They know the Chinese are very clever people. But anyway, so they're like, okay, look, dude, you're so badly in debt to us. Don't worry about paying it back. We own this port. We own these mineral rights. We own this infrastructure. And they have no recourse. The governments have no recourse. They're like, yep, sounds good. You know, so then they get so China owns ports in Africa. It owns infrastructure in Africa. It owns mineral rights in Africa. You know, they have their own police force in Africa. And, you know, and then they're like, okay, that was great. And then they go back to the government, like, would you like some more loans? And the government's like, yes, they're going to give us more loans. You know, it's like, it's hilarious. It is absolutely hilarious. So China they know what's up. But again, it takes people who love their people and love their place to be like, no, we're not going to take your loans. We're not going to take your Chinese loans. We're not going to take your corporatist loans, your rootless corporatist cosmopolitan loans. White student, most of the diesel trucks transporting goods in SoCal come up from Mexico. They don't have American plates. Yeah, it's the only way to get around it, you know. RJJ, it must be Fatwa Friday. My fatwa is against my free markets. No free markets. They are bad. We want markets for our people and our place. The market must serve our people and our place. Our people and place do not serve the market. Brian Cosson, welcome, fine sir. I read the same thing about the trucks. On top of that, there's no reason to buy another truck when gas trucks are banned after 2035 in California. Yeah, it's ridiculous. You know, it's like an absolute, it's that whole someone's law, conquest law or whatever, of like, anytime you see idiocy like this, you like assume that any bureaucracy is controlled by a cabal of its enemies. You know, it's literally that. It's like, if you were an enemy of California, you would do all these policies. W. Laser, I also heard that landscaping companies in California that use gas-powered tools will face higher tax burdens starting in 2025. Yeah, you know, it's all these little things of like, how do we make it hard for the economy? Mr. Max, we have to be less greedy, realize that you can't get something for nothing, and be willing to sacrifice. Yeah, exactly that. You know, it's that thing of you know, if you start a business, obviously it's self-interest, that's fine. You know, because here's the thing, a lot of libertarian thought, you know, Mises and Hayekian economy and all this kind of stuff. Like, yeah, it makes sense, you know, like self-interest and, you know, the invisible hand of the market and all this stuff. It makes sense only amongst a homogenous and moral people. The moment you introduce multiculturalism and diversity, you're like, oh, I'm not obligated to protect these people. I'm not obligated to treat these people well. The moment you introduce an immoral people, I'm not obligated to tell the truth. I'm not obligated to treat others fairly and scratch each other's backs, you know. So when it comes to Christian nationalism, you know, that's why, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, you can't have protected markets. You know, that's terrible stuff. And it's like, no, we love our people. We love our neighbor. You know, so if you start a Starbucks or a McDonald's franchise in your town, here's the, you know, you're not going to come in and be like, how do I serve my town with a McDonald's franchise? It's like, no, you're sucking all that money straight up into a vertical integrated monopoly. You're not buying your local farmer's beef for your burgers. You're not buying the local baker's buns for your buns. You're not paying all your workers, you know, some huge, it's all like, you know, minimum level wage. And, you know, all the money is going straight out the community. But if you start a mom and pop restaurant, a mom and pop coffee shop, it's like, okay, do we bake our own buns? You know, do we get our supplies from guys around here? You know, do we have our own farm? And then the kids that you're hiring at your little restaurant, it's like, hey, this is my neighbor's son. Hey, this is, you know, these are my people of like, for the next 30 years, these are the people, like, I want people to have fond memories of like, oh yeah, I worked holidays at Scott's restaurant. And hey, what a great guy. Like, man, we loved working for that guy. He taught us so much, like really grateful for the opportunity, blah, blah, all that stuff. And it's like, you know, that was Henry Ford. People like Henry Ford was based because he realized like this underclass, and not that everyone who worked for Henry Ford was a bum off the street, but in the essence of like, you have to see, if you're a business owner, pretty much everyone else under you is your underclass. You are someone who is creating value above everybody else. And so you're bringing in other people into your value system. And you're like, yeah, I'm going to treat them well. I'm not going to exploit them. And that only comes from a moral and rooted people. Tutumanga, welcome. Copper Star Nationalist, fatwa on California. I would say this, fatwa on Californication. You know, California is a beautiful place, and by God, we will retake it and then clean out the trash. Nick, welcome, Fancy. We shall buy the Bitcoin. Then we shall buy all the land. 2030 agenda. Very good. I like it very much. And that's it, you know, of like having a way forward for our people, you know. Because I think every tool we use, even when you look at Bitcoin and property investment, you know, because it's the same for me, you know, like a couple guys, we're in the process of creating BlackRock, which is the competitor to BlackRock. You know, we will be buying excess amounts of land, but it's not to become the dragon, to slay the dragon. We have to, at the forefront of our mission, understand that this is to serve our people and our place. It's not to serve mammon. It's not to serve our greed or our power and influence. It's like, no, the whole reason we're doing this is to serve my people and my place, to have peace and prosperity for my progeny. A righteous man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. You know, and so in all our dealings, you know, we can model BlackRock. You know, we're going to have a huge ass investment company that absolutely just gobbles up land and property and investments and stuff like that. It's a wonderful thing. But you can't operate it like a corporatist, like these dudes. You can't cut people and shank people, and you know, you can be ruthless against your enemies. You can plunder your enemies. But when it comes to your friends, when it comes to your neighbors and stuff, it's like, you be benevolent. You know, you leave a tip. You leave a tip. You don't shank them. You don't, you know, when someone says to you, hey, name a fair price, you name a fair price. You name a generous price to your neighbor. You name a generous price to your people and your place. White student, multiculturalism has resulted in one tribe encouraging the pillaging of another tribe in the name of justice. Yeah, you know, it's tribal resource wars, man. It's tribal resource wars. And which tribe has the most resources in the world? It's white Christian middle-class America. You know, they are the, you know, boomers right now are the wealthiest generation that has ever lived. And so tribal resource wars, how the heck do we pillage this group of people? Well, disinherit their children. So instead of their children getting that wealth transfer, let's disinherit the heck out of them. You know, let's turn them against their children. Let's make them nihilistic. Let's make them individualistic. Let's think, you know, that inheritance is evil. Let's think that, let's make the children think that inheritance and work is evil. Let's make them resentful against their parents. Let's make the parents resentful against the millennials. You know, like let's, and it's like exactly that, man. It's, you know, let's, it's that whole kind of metaphor that I use of like, you know, if my dad brings up us three brothers, you know, and for like 20 years of our life, you know, we're running the family business and my dad's grooming the three of us to take over the business. And it's like, you know, this is the family business. What you put in is what you're going to get out. You know, you learn to get on with your brothers, because we all know that family feuds is what destroys family fortunes and businesses. So it's like, all right, we understand that, work through our differences, all that kind of stuff. And then one day our old father, you know, he has like a worm tongue talking to him. And the worm tongue's like, you need to go to Africa and adopt three little babies and bring them home. And you need to go to Asia and adopt three little babies and bring them home. You need to go to South America and drop three little babies and bring them home. So, you know, we all come in for Christmas lunch. And instead of just being us three brothers, there's now nine other brothers. So like, and there's nine other people there. And your dad's like, oh, by the way, guys, these are all your new brothers. They're all Tungays. There's nine new Tungays. Here they all are. And we're like, what? Dad, what? And he's like, yeah, I adopted them. This is Pajit. He's your new brother. This is Fernando. This is Mfundu. This is we'll call this guy Charles. I actually can't pronounce his name. We'll just call him Charles. Yeah, it's like, these are all your new brothers. There's the paper. Signed it. Piece of paper. They are paper Tungays. And, you know, they're going to work the business with us, and they're also going to get the inheritance. Don't be selfish now. Don't be selfish. They're your brothers now, you see. And it's like, whoa, whoa, like that. My brothers and I, like, we've worked together for 10, 20 years. You know, we've had fist fights over stuff. We've cried. We've bloody shouted at each other. We've told each other we're done. We've made up. We've built trust. You know, we've been offended with each other. Our wives have been offended with each other. Our children, blah, blah, blah. Like, there's 20 years of social capital here that we've built up with our brothers that these guys are just going to jump in. It's like, we have to build another 20 years of that with these guys and give everything that we've worked for these guys. And it's like, yeah, they're your brothers now. They're your brothers now. Yeah, and we're Christians too. Remember, we're Christians too now, which means that there is no families and stuff. We're all family now. You know, and it's like, what? Like, dad's gone crazy. You know, and you know, then old Pajit drives the tractor into the water because he doesn't know how to drive the tractor. And you're like, you just ruined the tractor. And it's like, yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. He's your brother. You got to treat him nicely. You know, it's like, that's what's happened on a national scale, is that the boomer generation of politicians and artists have invited the whole world to share in the inheritance of the next generations coming up. And have basically just said, oh yeah, you know, you've got to treat them just like as if they were your real brother, your real neighbor, your real citizen, compatriot, whatever you would call it. And it's all to disinherit the boomer. You know, it's to disinherit the boomer to disinherit his children of his wealth. Mr. Max, the boomers own all the wealth, but who is owning the boomers? It's worm tongue. It's the media. It's the, you know, they have such institutional trust. They have such institutional trust. And so who runs the institutions? White student and all the new brothers are trained to lecture you about your privilege and demand redistribution of your inheritance. Yeah, exactly. Gareth, welcome, brother. So praise God. What else did I have here? Oh yeah. So David and the outcasts. So David, he's out in the desert and, you know, he's called to a mighty work. He's called to the restoration of his nation to God. You know, Israel at the time is kind of besieged by the Philistines. Obviously, David wins a famous battle and gets them a bit of reprieve. And then clan Saul kicks him back out into the desert and there's still problems. And it even says, because David goes over to the Philistines and there's lots of Philistine raiding carrying on with the Israelites, you know, so there's just a lot of issues with peace and prosperity. There's a lot of violence and poverty going on. And so David is out in the desert and his whole life is like, okay, the restoration of my people to God, the restoration of peace and prosperity for my progeny, you know, so maybe not in my time, but I want my sons and my grandsons to inherit peace and prosperity, that they're not fighting the Philistines, that they're not being raided and cursed and oppressed and all this kind of stuff. So who does God bring him for this mission? Is it 400 of the absolute finest aristocrats of the land? You know, I'm reading this book on the history of England, and it's talking about Agincourt, which is the famous victory of the English, where just an absolute balls up, but there's a great line there, old Churchill, who's writing the book, but he writes, the flower of France was plucked that day at Agincourt. The flower of the French nobility, you know, because basically like every single French nobleman died on the field of battle. And it's like, that's all the nobles gone, the finest, the flower of France. But anyway, with David, it's like, does God bring him the flower of Israel? You know, all the finest aristocrats' sons, all the finest warriors' sons, all the finest businessmen's sons to come and restart the nation. It's like, no, he brings them the underclass. He brings them 400 absolute underclass men. You know, these are outcasts. These are rough men. These are our dissidents. These are men who don't fit into clown world, who don't fit into clown souls, hard, good times, hard times, whatever you want to call it. It's probably on the brink of changeover over there. And so David says, fine, I'll be the captain. I'll be the captain of the underclass. But it took him saying, I will not serve the corporatists. I will not serve those who are dishonoring to God and dishonoring to our people and our place. Because that's what clown Saul was, right? He dishonored God. He was not a man after God's heart. He also was not a man after the heart of, to look after the heart of his people and place. He very much was a coward and let, you know, the enemies run rampant all over his people in place. Whereas David was a man after God's heart, and his heart was to protect his people in place. And so God sends him the underclass, and it's basically like, you're going to use the underclass. And so that's kind of our, you know, when you look at leftism, the reason leftism kind of sucks to us, you know, I said we were in this false dichotomy of like, we're either libertarian boys or conservative boys. And we're like, but capitalism is the only way, you know? And it's like, the poors can help themselves up by their bootstraps and all this kind of stuff. It's like, no, chaps, you know, if you read most of history of people digging themselves out of poverty, it's, you know, in the words of Benjamin Franklin, the poor must be driven out of poverty and violence. They cannot be expected to do it on their own. You know, and this is where old idealist Scott would have been like, oh, Scott, you bastard. Every man is a, you know, absolute genius just waiting for his opportunity. And it's like, no. You know, this is where you can actually understand why Marx was so popular and why all this critical race, critical theory stuff catches on, is because there is very real systemic stuff that keeps people oppressed. And as Christians, we are called to break those systems. And here's a diagnosis problem, right? Because all the Marxists, whereas the Christian wants to break the systems of the devil and reintroduce hierarchy of God, reintroduce patriarchy of God, reintroduce the ways of God. And equality is not one of those ways. The only equality that a Christian supports is equality before the law, equality of worth before God, whether you're underclass or aristocrat, noblesse oblige. And so we have a different operating system, but unfortunately we've been memed into this libertarian / conservative thing of fighting the left means fighting the underclass. Fighting the left means disdaining the poor and, you know, the unions. Because again, the unions up until the 20s were just working class, were men who are trying to do right by the working class. They're like, we don't want to be exploited by the elites. We want protection. We want protectionism of the market for our labor pool. You know, it's basically seeking price controls for their labor. You know, we're not going to undercut. We're not going to undersell ourselves. Like, we want to be treated well. It's the same with agricultural unions, you know, of price controls and plant controls. You know, we only plant this much tobacco. We only plant this much corn according to your size of land. So if you own 100 acres, if you own 10 acres, proportionally, you're both going to get the same shot at growing the same amount of tobacco or the same amount of corn. And then we're going to ensure that we get a good price for it, because we're not, the dude with a million acres is not just like outpricing all of the little guys, you know. That is the true position of the Christian nationalist, is to care for the underclass, is to take the underclass to heart of like, these are the guys we're going to serve. These are the guys that we're going to protect and drive out of poverty and violence. libertarians and conservatives are led by, are paid by, and serve corporatists. You know, it's all about big business. You know, that's all we dream of when we're libertarians. One day when I'm a big businessman, one day when I'm a corporate oligarch, you know, because we realize like, oh, corporate oligarchy. And it's like, you know, they tell you these soothing lies of like, when you're a corporate oligarch, you can do good. You know, just like these corporate oligarchs are doing good. And it's like, they're not doing good. They're bloody destroying people in place because it's not their people and it's not their place. Mr. Max redacting messages, my goodness. So anyway, gentlemen, I praise God. The whole point of this Fatwa Friday is to disabuse ourselves of protecting the free market, protecting capitalism. You know, it's this whole thing of like, of course, you know, we believe in capital usage. You know, of course, we believe in private property and investment and producing value and trading value and all this kind of stuff. It's just that capital serves our people in place. Our people in place do not serve capital. You know, it's a huge distinction change. The market serves our people in place. Our people in place doesn't serve the market. And we have to get that order right. You know, if you put God as your priority, then money will serve your heart after God. But if you put money as your highest priority, then God will serve, you know, like, oh, well, God said I can bloody have as many illegal immigrants as I want working for me because God, yeah, God blesses me and money comes first, you know? And it's like money becomes God. Corporatism becomes God. Capital becomes God. And it's like, no, like as a patriarch, God, I'm a man after God's heart and I will serve my people in my place. And so, you know, we're going to close our business on a Sunday. I'm just saying this is a simple, easy one of like, we're going to close our business on a Sunday. We're not going to be 24/7. Like that's not God's ways. You know, we're going to pay our workers well. We're going to be generous. We're going to use our neighbor's services over some foreigner's services. We're going to cut the foreigner out and he's not going to be able to come in and compete with your neighbor, you know? And again, then it's like, well, Scott, how do we stop our neighbor from exploiting us? And it's like, chaps, that's where Christian morality comes in, you know, of like, you go and confront your neighbor. You go and confront him. You're like, look, chap, you're taking advantage of us. And it's like, you need to sort this out. But it's you don't just forego the courage of confronting people and then just go to China. It's like, oh, I hate my neighbor, I'm going to China. You know, I hate my neighbor, I'm going to Mexico. I hate my neighbor, I'm going to the corporatists. You know, you first have this chat, you know, and it's okay to shun your neighbors. You know, if a neighbor is not being neighborly, well, then he gets shut out of the neighborhood, you know? So it's all of these things that we really need to think through of like economic theory. You know, we need to move on from libertarian economic theory and we need to start majoring on nationalist, Christian nationalist economic theory, you know, of how do we serve and honor God, our people, and our place through economy. And we need to answer the underclass question. We need to answer protection against the corporatist question. You know, these are questions that galaxy brain economists need to approach from a Christian nationalist perspective. Well, praise God, gentlemen. I praise God. Have a wonderful weekend further. Rugby tomorrow, praise God. The boys are playing down in Lexington, so that'll be fun. Go in and watch some ruggers. And then we'll see you all on Monday for a good report, as it were. God bless you, gentlemen. And go tear it up on Twitter. Praise God.